I think that was the common reaction in the Confederacy. Even on the federal side, there was a sense of disbelief might be too strong a word, but a difficulty in coming to terms with the fact that the Army of Northern Virginia was no longer a Confederate force to be reckoned with. They certainly believed that this was a major stage of the war. The war is probably over, but they couldn't quite believe, many of them, that Lee had actually surrendered. I'll quote from a New Englander named Stephen Minot Weld, an officer in the Army of the Potomac who'd fought through much of the war. He wrote to his sister and explained to her that he wasn't really that excited about Lee's surrender, that at some point he might be, but he couldn't be yet, and this is how he explained it. He said, "To tell the truth, we none of us realize even yet that he has actually surrendered. I had a sort of impression that we should fight him all our lives. He was like a ghost to children, something that haunted us so long that we could not realize that he and his army were really out of existence to us. It will take me some months to be conscious of this fact." So again, both Union and Confederate testimony, I think, makes clear why Appomattox is such a great moment during the Civil War. It's not literally the end of the war, but it's effectively the end of the war because this very important Confederate army has been removed from the Southern order of battle. All right, Lee's finished. His army, gone. Let's see what happened to the rest of the Confederate military forces in the field. The other major surrenders. After Appomattox, several forces are still to be reckoned with. Lee only commanded about 25% of the soldiers under arms at the time of Appomattox. The second surrender came at Durham Station, North Carolina. There was no Durham, North Carolina at the time, just a station on the railroad, approximately where modern Durham is, near Raleigh. On April 18th, Joseph Johnston and William Tecumseh Sherman met at Durham Station in a place called the Bennett House, a very modest little place, and signed a memorandum of agreement that revealed, I think, Sherman's essential sympathy with the White South. He'd been all for making hard war on the White South until they were finally defeated, but once fighting ceased, he became very generous, far more generous even than Grant and Lincoln had been. Lee's army's gone, Johnston and Sherman sit down, and these are the terms that Sherman offers. He says, "First of all, I'll accept the surrender of all Confederate forces, not just yours, General Johnston, but all of them." So this will serve for everybody. "I will recognize the legitimacy of the state governments currently sitting in the South." These are Confederate governments. And Sherman is saying, "I'll recognize them as legitimate." Third, he guaranteed the political rights of former Confederates. "You'll have political rights," he says. And finally, he offered a general amnesty. Well, Sherman has stepped way beyond his authority in offering these kinds of things to Joseph Johnston. He doesn't have the power to say, "I'll accept the surrender of all forces," and he certainly doesn't have the power to make these political decisions about who will suffer disabilities and who will not, whether state governments can sit. Andrew Johnson, Lincoln is dead by this time, of course, Andrew Johnson and Secretary of War Stanton rejected Sherman's terms. And Grant had to tell Sherman, "Listen, the terms you can offer are essentially the terms I offered to Lee. Those are the terms that we're offering. They have to be pretty much identical to mine." Sherman learned that on April 24th, that his sweeping terms would not be accepted by his government. And he and Johnston met again on April 26th, again at the Bennett House at Durham Station. And that day, Johnston surrendered the remnant of the old Army of Tennessee and the other troops that he had led in the Carolinas, about 30,000 in all, surrendered those to Sherman. During the surrender proceedings, John C. Breckinridge took part, former vice president under James Buchanan, candidate for presidency in 1860, and he Confederate Secretary of War for a time and a general. According to Johnston's later account, Breckinridge was in a very somber mood. Breckinridge was there because he was considered a top-flight lawyer with great political experience, and he might be useful in discussing these kinds of things. Joe Johnston later said that Breckinridge, in a somber mood, appeared dull and heavy at the outset, he said. Then Sherman asked if anyone would like a drink. Johnston later recalled that Breckinridge tossed away a quid of tobacco he was working on, poured himself a huge glassful of this whiskey and drank it right down.